President Trump takes a victory lap a day after his acquittal in the Senate.
We've been going through this now for over 3 years. It was evil, it was corrupt, it was dirty cops, it was leakers and liars. And this should never, ever happen to another president, ever. I don't know that other presidents would have been able to take it. Some people said no, they wouldn't have.
We'll talk about how impeachment could play out in Trump's re-election campaign. Plus, the Department of Homeland Security is cutting New Yorkers out of programs that give travelers expedited entry into the U.S. It's Thursday, February 6th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. A Chinese doctor who was among the first to flag the spreading coronavirus has died after becoming infected himself. 33-year-old Li Wenliang was an ophthalmologist based in Wuhan, the epicenter of the outbreak. People reacting to his death on social media expressed frustration with government officials for not responding faster to evidence of the epidemic. The number of coronavirus cases continues to grow. More than 28,000 people have been infected and more than 500 people have died. Tom Perez, the head of the Democratic National Committee, is calling for a re-canvass of the Iowa caucuses to restore public confidence after a debacle that's delayed the final results for nearly 3 days. Perez says a review of the worksheets from each caucus site would ensure accuracy. We're still waiting for the results from about 50 out of the more than 1,700 caucuses in Iowa. With 97% of precincts reporting, the race is still very close, showing Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg nearly tied. Activist fund Elliott Management has quietly built up a more than $2.5 billion stake in Japanese technology giant SoftBank. Elliott is known as an investor that seeks to influence company management, and we report that it's pushing SoftBank to make changes to boost its share price. Those changes include improving corporate governance and increasing transparency around its Vision Fund, which SoftBank has used to invest in big tech companies, including Uber and Slack. The fund's investment strategy has been under fire after it was forced to write down the value of its stakes in office sharing company WeWork. That led to SoftBank's biggest loss in nearly 40 years. E-cigarette maker Juul has raised more than $700 million from investors, according to people familiar with the matter. The fundraising comes as Juul is facing lawsuits and investigations into its marketing practices. The company has been blamed for a surge in underage vaping and has pulled most of its flavors from the U.S. market in the past year. A day after his acquittal in the Senate, President Trump invited aides, Republican allies, and lawmakers to the East Room of the White House.
This is really not a news conference. It's not a speech. It's not anything. It's just we're sort of, it's a celebration because we have something that just worked out. I mean, it worked out. We went through hell unfairly, did nothing wrong. I've done things wrong in my life, I will admit. Not purposely, but I've done things wrong. But this is what the end result is.
That applause came as the president held up a copy of the Washington Post with the headline, Trump Acquitted. He also spoke about his acquittal during the National Prayer Breakfast this morning. Joining me from Washington with more details is Wall Street Journal White House reporter Catherine Lucey. So, Catherine, we're hearing a much different tone from President Trump today as compared to earlier in the week during the State of the Union address, where he notably did not say the word impeachment. What can you tell us about what we heard from the president during today's events?
Well, today, really what you saw was an extended victory lap from the president. He's been celebrating since the Senate impeachment acquittal vote yesterday. But today you really saw that on full display, starting this morning at the National Prayer Breakfast, which is typically a nonpartisan event. But he really used that moment to launch criticism against Mitt Romney, Nancy Pelosi, and talk about what he saw as political persecution. And then he continued that tone in a much broader way at the White House today at an event that really and sometimes looked like a political rally. It was in the White House's East Room. It was packed with supporters, staff, a huge number of Republican members of Congress, his legal team. There were repeated standing ovations and cheers. And he spoke for roughly an hour, talking at length about what he saw as, being targeted, unfair investigations. He really used this moment, I think, to try and, take sort of vindication.
Catherine, tell us a little bit more about President Trump's appearance at the National Prayer Breakfast this morning, about the attendees and what that event is sort of like.
This was a very interesting moment because even though we knew that President Trump was going to be addressing impeachment and the acquittal vote later in the day, he didn't hold back on referencing it at this event, which typically is not a political event. It's a long-standing breakfast that has been going on since the 1950s. Presidents from both parties have addressed it. Members of Congress from both parties are there. Indeed, Nancy Pelosi was there, the Speaker of the House. She was seated not far from him, as was Kevin McCarthy. So there was a big range of politicians from both sides and religious leaders from many backgrounds. That said, one thing I think that you always think about when President Trump addresses a religious gathering is, he has been very focused on Christian conservatives, evangelical voters throughout his 2016 campaign and since he's been in office. He really sees that group as one sort of key interest group that helped propel him to the White House. He has worked very hard on policy issues that he knows are important to them, things like appointing conservative judges, for example. And so he made some of those pitches again today, but he also did use his remarks to, complain and vent about the impeachment process.
Let's talk about some of the criticism that you mentioned. President Trump pointedly took aim at Democrats here, and we know the feud between the president and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was heightened this week after she visibly tore up the State of the Union. He also seemed to refer to comments she made about praying for the president.
Yes, that's right. Back in December, at one point at one of her news conferences, she said that she prays for the president. The president appeared to allude to that today at the prayer breakfast, questioning whether that was the case. She then today shot back, insisting that she does pray for him and was very critical herself of his State of the Union, of the way he has handled things. And so I think one thing to think about, if we think about what today means and we look forward, I think one thing that is clear is that this moment of political rancor and division, it's not just that it's not ended after impeachment. It's arguably only going to get worse. There were very clear battle lines drawn today. There were very, very strong statements from both sides.
And to that point about the deepening divide, we also saw the president go after, as you mentioned, Utah Senator Mitt Romney, the only Republican to split his vote yesterday to convict the president on the first article of impeachment.
That's right. We know the president has been frustrated by this. He was very critical of Mitt Romney today, called him a failed former presidential candidate, questioned his faith as one of the things that he has cited as a reason for making what Romney has characterized as a moral choice. And part of that obviously is the president is upset with Romney specifically, but also that one of the things he takes great pride in and has been very successful in throughout his presidency and particularly during impeachment is keeping Republicans together. So the Republican Party is really in lockstep behind President Trump. It is his party. We have not seen much in the way of division or people stepping out or people criticizing him, compared to the kinds of things that other presidents have dealt with their parties. And so this is sort of an unusual example of someone not staying in line.
Wall Street Journal White House reporter Catherine Lucey joining me from Washington. Thank you so much, Catherine.
Thank you.
If you've gone through customs at an airport recently, you may have seen or used that fast track line, Global Entry. It's an enrollment program like TSA PreCheck that pre-screens travelers, in this case, to give U.S. citizens expedited entry back into the United States. The Trump administration is now suspending enrollment in the program, but only for New Yorkers. That change is connected to New York's sanctuary laws, which are designed to safeguard immigrants who come into the U.S. illegally from deportation. Joining me now from Washington to explain is Wall Street Journal reporter Michelle Hackman. Michelle, what's the department's reasoning for suspending enrollment for New Yorkers in these programs?
Sure. So New York State passed a law. It went into effect in December called the Green Light Law, and it does two things. First of all, it allows unauthorized immigrants to apply for driver's licenses, but of more key concern to the Department of Homeland Security, it also shields the state's driver's license records, so all the records at the DMV, from the Department of Homeland Security. And that was intended as a sort of protection for unauthorized immigrants in New York, obviously. ICE and CBP are housed in the Department of Homeland Security and can and do often use that DMV data to track down unauthorized immigrants and deport them. So that was the intent behind the law. But what DHS is saying is this is a really dangerous thing you've done. You've cut off a really key investigative tool to us. You know, we use this information not only for unauthorized immigrants, but often for criminals that we're tracking down, for people that we want to, you know, be able to match up their face with their photo, get their address, you know, other information that's contained in the database.
But Michelle, how does cracking down on enrollment among New Yorkers in these so-called trusted traveler programs fit in with the Trump administration's overall immigration policies?
Well, it's twofold. You know, DHS says that these programs, you know, when you apply for something like Global Entry or a Sentry card, something like that, they check state driver's license records as a part of the check that they put you through to make sure that you can be a trusted traveler. And not having access to this information really impedes their efforts to do that. And so they said, you know, it's not really safe. We are going to just cut off all New Yorkers' access to these programs. But I think it's also meant as a warning to New York to try to get them to change their law. Also a warning to other states who might be considering adopting similar sanctuary laws that you're going to face consequences if you do this. I mean, the Trump administration really hates sanctuary policies and is willing to wield these sort of blunt axes to try to change them.
Right. This suspension comes after the president spoke out against sanctuary cities pointedly during his State of the Union address. And we're hearing from critics, including a spokesman for New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, who called the department's move political retaliation. Is that the sense observers have of this move?
Yeah. So I think that there is some legitimate security concern. However, the fact that DHS is really airing this argument publicly with New York rather than trying to resolve it with them, rather than even trying to go through the courts, suggests that there's some political upside for them here. You know, they really like fighting sanctuary policies that they think are unpopular. They think that plays well with President Trump's base. And I think we're going to keep seeing them do things like that. New York is also a great foe for them in that respect.
So what about New Yorkers who are already enrolled in these programs? Will they be impacted? And are other people interested in the program being discouraged from applying?
Well, so there are about 80,000 New Yorkers right now, according to DHS, that had applications in process for one of these programs, Global Entry, et cetera, that are going to have their applications denied. So those people will feel real impact immediately. People currently enrolled can keep using their status, but folks who would have had to renew this year are just not going to be able to renew.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Michelle Hackman joining me from Washington. Thank you so much, Michelle.
Thank you.
And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.